Welcome to Hollywood Horsepower, the show about the story behind the story. Today we are joined by a very special guest and someone who it's an honor for me to speak to. I've known about his family for a long time. They're a legend in this industry, both in Hollywood and in horse racing. So without any delay, I want to welcome Billy Koch to the show. Billy, it is an honor to have you on.
Oh, you are way too kind, my friend.
Got to tell you, you don't know. I mean, so I am a huge old Hollywood fan. So your grandfather and dad to me are royalty.
Well, they're royalty to me too. So that's a good start.
We have a lot in common. And you know, I wanted to kind of so a little bit about our show, and you have an amazing show yourself, which we'll get to. This is kind of like what people don't know, right? So people know, obviously, Howard Koch, right?
Yes, he always had the W in there. That's my grandfather.
Yeah, Howard
because
W.
I guess there was another Howard Koch. Yes, my dad is Hawk. Yes,
and they,
my grandfather used the W in his name because there was the writer of Casablanca was Howard Koch, and he never wanted credit that was a different person.
That's amazing. You know what?
Yeah,
Casablanca is my favorite film of all time, which may or may not be bad with your family. No, it is. It's like there's something.
My grandfather used to, Mark, you'll like this. My grandfather had a hat that he would wear sometimes that says, "I didn't write Casablanca."
So I have to tell you a really funny story. Michael Blowen, who we obviously both know, is founder of Old Friends. So Michael was the entertainment writer for the Boston Globe for like 27 years. I know that he's met your dad, and he may have even, I don't know how many other people he would have known, but the interesting thing was he was really good friends with Julie Epstein. And I have the notes, graciously enough, that Michael gave me of the some of the censorship and some of the notes back and forth between Warner Brothers on Casablanca.
Interesting. Wow. Look at you, you are a historian.
Yeah, it is. It is funny. So these full circle moments. But I mean, going back, I mean, for people that don't know him, and you know, I'm not sure what rock they were living under if they don't. But I mean, you know, your grandfather, you know, Howard W. was, you know, a director, a producer, an actor, you know, production company. I mean, it's amazing.
I don't think he acted a lot, Mark, and I don't think
he
really liked directing either.
He does. He actually has a credit on a movie from 19 way back, and it was like he was a cast feature film.
way before my time. No, way before my time. No, he was. I mean, listen. You know, he worked with his buddy Walter Matthau and did all those movies, Odd Couple, and all those. And you know, as he really loved the Academy, and he produced many of the Academy Award shows back in the day. He won the Gene Hirschholt Humanitarian Award back in, like, I think it was like 1990, I want to say, or 89. And obviously probably best known for producing Airplane and Ghost were his two kind of big movies that, you know, I know he was very proud of.
Which another full circle. I mean, Dean Martin was one of my favorite guys of all time. And Airplane, I can't think of that without thinking of him.
Well, it's funny because actually Larry Colmus, who calls the races and now just is taking over for Trevor Denman, who retired yesterday.
I saw that.
That's Larry's favorite movie. And he quotes, I get usually an Airplane quote once a week from Larry. And it's really, you know, it's funny because in this world of canceling things, Airplane seems to have skirted by somehow, and it's, if you watch it today, it's still funny. Like, it's
absolutely
really funny. No,
it's
and
funny
it, and it makes
many,
fun of everybody.
It shows how well it was done, really. You know, a farm, and it's kind of one of those ones that I call an evergreen. It gets bigger and brighter as the years go on. It's kind of funny. You know, it's like Tommy Boy or Caddyshack or Animal House. Yep. They just they just continue to go on. And it's kind of funny. Some of these weren't that strong out of the gate, and they actually become stronger as time's gone on.
Yeah, it's definitely a rewatchable. And if you haven't seen it lately, I highly suggest it. By the way, the runtime is like, you know, it's like an hour and 15 minutes. It's not very long.
I know. It's a super short film, very well done. But, and the other thing that, to me, is fun about that, kind of similar to like the old Love Boat episodes, is watching Airplane and seeing people that later became more famous.
Sure.
So you see these people drift in and out, and it's like, oh, my God, I didn't know he was in it.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, it's pretty good. It's really good. Those guys were geniuses. I mean, I think the Abrams brothers, and they were ahead of their time. They were geniuses, period.
So another hilarious story, and you mentioned Massow. So, and I'll bet, so your dad, Howard had to be friends with Epstein, too.
He kind of ran in that circle
because Julie and Walter Matthau were really good friends. And, you know, another funny story is towards the end, you know, when he's in the home and, you know, things, it's getting bad. Michael kind of went to see him, and he said they're sitting there watching some show that the home is putting on, and it's horrible, just a terrible play, you know, and it's just, and he said, into the door, busts Walter Matthau. And he's like, Julie, They're racing it, San Anita, and he grabs his wheelchair and runs him into the other room and turns the TV on so they can watch the races. And Michael follows him in, and he says, he sits there for a minute, and Julie looks at him and goes, that was a horrible play. And that was the only thing he said, like, all day.
That's but pretty I guess funny. That yeah, he was
a, Matthau used
he
to
liked
go
the horses, yeah.
Yeah, he loved
yeah,
it.
No.
And that's kind of, you know, where I wanted to lead in. It's like, it's always been interesting to me, the intersection between Hollywood and horse racing. You know, you go back and, you know, you look at, you know, countless movies, and there's always references to Santa Anita. There's even some on Del Mar and, you know, La Salle. And, you know, I love that. And I think it's really cool how there is so much of a weave between Hollywood and horse racing.
Yeah, and my grandfather was kind of influential on that, bringing stars to Hollywood Park all the time. That was his stomping grounds. He was on the board of directors for many years there. But you go back in time, I mean, Del Mar is Bing Crosby, right? He's
absolutely
the one who did it. So, I mean, the parallels are right there in front of you. And I think, you know, even today, you know, you look at the Kentucky Derby and everybody shows up, whether it's Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or whoever it is. You're like, that's where the stars want to be. And that's, you know, they call it the sport of kings. And there's a reason for that, because, you know, you look at Queen Elizabeth, right? I mean, she loved it probably more than anything. And so it's one of those sports that it's infectious. And I think from people in the movie business that are very competitive, and obviously in a massively competitive field, they like it. And I think it's as simple as that. You just have to have a thirst for the competition, the love for the animal, and just the passion for the whole game as a whole.
No, it's very true. I was at the Fountain of Youth Stakes last week at Gulfstream, coming to you from Miami right now, and it was, you know, Tom Brady was sitting behind me. You know, I mean, it's in fact, he had a horse in the undercard that did well. So it is true that it still intertwines. And, you know, one of the ones that was really critical out there that is one of my favorite tracks of all time was Hollywood Park. And you talk to anybody, and I only went there a couple of times before it closed, but because I did work in L.A. and worked with studios for a while, and it was like Hollywood Park was like just like a playground for anybody in the industry. It was like you couldn't hardly walk there on a afternoon not seeing, you know, directors, producers, actors, you know, executives. And, you know, it's kind of funny to me how many meetings were held at Hollywood Park.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. Yeah, I know. I back in the day, definitely. And Hollywood Park is missed. I mean, that's that was my kind of home track when I was a kid, just because my grandfather would pick me up on, and my sister, he'd pick us up on Saturday and Sunday, and we'd go out there and we'd get dressed up and we'd go up to the director's room, and that was just our weekend, and that was our life. That's all we knew. And it's a shame that we lost it. And looking at horse racing as a whole, we're not going to gain any tracks. We just lost Golden Gate, we lost Hollywood Park. There is contraction in our game, and it's unfortunate because those tracks, even going back to Bay Meadows, I mean, I just listed three tracks off the top of my head that all were fantastic places, and especially from when I was growing up. And it's just a shame. It's too bad. But maybe it's good for the game. I'm a positive
Hollywood
guy,
Park.
So.
You'll appreciate this. You're probably one of the few people that would appreciate this. I have a Hollywood Park saddle cloth and outrider cloth hanging in my office, and a Freehouse race cloth from Hollywood Park.
I got you beat.
I'm sure you do, but I love Hollywood Park. It was my favorite place.
I have a barn sign Barn 79. It's huge. It's actually hanging in our kitchen. And then I also have when you're in the box seat area, they had these little hanging signs that said, section 4 or whatever it was, box 300. And I have one of those at our house as well. So those were my two keepsakes from Hollywood Park, along with a whole lot of memories. In fact, I just did on my last pod, we're doing this Derby draft, which we're having fun with and going back through history and doing categories and stuff. And I took Seattle Slough as my first pick in the Hall of Fame category. And I was at Hollywood Park when he got beat by J.O. Tobin, and I still think it's affecting me.
Oh, wow. That's so funny. So I was I was actually pretty close to Kruger for quite a few years, because he was a regular fixture at a lot of the events in Kentucky. And you want to talk about a character? He's hilarious.
Oh yeah, those good times, my friend. Good times.
I really wish that I had been born a few years, decade or two earlier, that I could have enjoyed more time in Hollywood Park, because I feel like that was. I mean, I love Santa Anita. Don't get me wrong, Santa Anita to me and are you walk through there and you feel like the walls could talk to you. But
absolutely,
it's like Hollywood Park was special. It was a different feel. And it's so funny to me, and you would know this better than I would, but I'm more like guessing at times, but it looked like there was quite a few movies that were shot there. Just looking
at
some
I know I know that they did reshoots for Let It Ride there, because my grandfather got brought on to that movie, which I think would make a great remake, by the way. And I remember, because I went to see the filming, and I told my grandfather I was going to run around the racetrack, because I just wanted to see if I could make it around. And I'll never forget. He's like, "Yeah, go ahead." And I literally got to the clubhouse turn and just turned around and started walking home. I mean, it's a little tough when I don't even know how old I was, 12. And it's a mile track, which I didn't understand really what a mile was at that time, probably. And you're running on quicksand. Yeah, I was like, this isn't going to work. So I turned around and went back.
But, your grandfather's response, though. Howard W.'s like, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he's like, go ahead. Yeah, it was really funny. Yeah, listen, like you said, I mean, look, it's called Hollywood Park. I mean, it's Hollywood. I mean,
it doesn't get any better.
The name says it all. So, I mean, right. And they were really the first, Friday night racing was awesome. It was so much fun. It's just a shame. That's it.
And I've got a few little pieces. I've got some Hollywood Gold Cup glasses and little things like that. But it is nothing like you've got, nothing like the memories. I mean, to grow up with that is amazing. Now, did your family, when did they get into horse racing? Was it your grandfather?
Yeah, it was my grandfather way back in the day.
Or was it even before him?
No, no. Like, it started with my grandfather. Okay. He just loved it. Well, my great-grandfather, was at, who I'm named after, was a bookie. So that Billy Koch, and not to be confused with the baseball player for the A's and the Blue Jays, he was a bookie, so it was kind of, I guess it was in our blood, right? My grandfather just loved it, and he had horses with Walter Matthau. I'll never forget. They called it Billy Charlie Stables, so Charlie was Walter's son, and we were just fixtures at the races and at the track when I was a little kid. And back in the day, you like this, when you break your maiden, the jockey would give you their whip. So my grandfather had all these whips at his house. And I used to run around. They had a little swimming pool in the back, and I used to listen to Bill Gaher call the races for Horse and Jockey and Dave Richards. And I would go around the pool just pretending I was a jockey. I wanted to be a jockey, but that didn't last too long, as I am now like 6 feet, 225. So it didn't quite work out for me. But
you those, and Shaq,
those were, you know, that was the day. No, we had, you know, my first horse that I ever loved was a horse named Doc Simon. That, you know, was named, that was probably in like 1971, I would say. So I was a little kid. And then our big horse was Telly's Pop, who my grandfather owned with Telly Savalas. Remember, Telly Savalas was obviously Kojak.
Oh, wow.
So there you go. Another Hollywood connection. Yeah. And he won the 2-year-old Western Triple Crown. He was one of the favorites for the Kentucky Derby. He got injured. Mel Studi was our trainer. And Telly would come to the races, and I've told this story numerous times, so anybody listening, forgive me. But, you know, Telly would bring a bag of lollipops. That was his thing, for those of you listening who don't remember Kojak. He always had a lollipop. And
if
he
you
would
don't remember
have
Kojak,
me...
get a life and look it up.
Well, you know, we got to be careful. People don't remember those things. So no, but he would give me the bag with the lollipops, and any girl at the track, Telly would be like, give a lollipop to her. So I was the kid that walked around handing out lollipops for Telly Savalas at all the racetracks in California. Those are my earliest memories. I mean, I've been at the track since I was 5 years old. I mean, I people always joke that the kids learn to read by reading the racing form. I've heard that cliche over and over again, but mine was absolutely true. I mean, I loved looking at the form and picking horses, and my grandfather, we'd go to the track, and my grandfather would give my sister and I, he'd give us both $20, and my sister was really diligent. She'd bet $2, she'd bet the show, she'd make a little money, and at the end of the day, she'd give him back the 20 and she'd keep her winnings. And I would bet my $20 on a daily double in the first two races, and I'd lose, and I'd ask him for more money. So that was the difference between me and my sister.
That's so funny. So yeah. What's hilarious is I did not grow up in it. I actually kind of fell into horse racing through marketing and was very fortunate to meet the right people at the right time that were very kind and gracious to me and kind of drug me along, like Michael Bowen, Baffert, and, you know, Terry Finley, and just countless people that have always been yourself, people that are just nice to me for no apparent reason, people that I can do nothing for. The funny thing is, my son did grow up around it. So I was taking my kids to the races because they were small. He's now 22. So funny story, when he is about 7 years old, we go to a high school football game at, you know, their school where it's away from horse racing. And we're with another family, and we're walking in, and the wife, a friend of mine's wife, says, "Oh, we've got to get a program." My son, without missing a beat, said, "You don't need a program unless you're going to bet." And everybody's like, "Hey, take your kid to the track much?"
That's good.
But it is
kind of
funny that it's missing. That is something I feel is missing, is we're in the first generation where, as a country, they didn't go to the track. Like in my family, even growing up in Michigan, there was horse racing at the Detroit Fairgrounds. That was actually pretty, it was a local in Hazel Park. You know, it was not like Kentucky or New York or California, but it was definitely an attraction. So you grew up going with your parents, and I feel like that's something that you don't see as much today. And I kind of wish that, I encourage it all the time. I tell people, one thing that is really cool about this sport, it is very accessible. So you can, for a very reasonable cost, go to the races, whether it's Santa Anita, Gulfstream, you know, New York, Kentucky, and you're right up close and personal. And it's not odd to look over and here's an owner, here's a trainer, and they will talk to you. I mean, that's kind of how I kind of crawled through this. Is it's like I would just start talking to people, and they were very gracious and kind, and they not only talked to somebody else. And that's something that I feel is unique, because, you know, I've worked with almost every professional sport there is. That's not common. Like, you go to an NFL game, you're not going to probably have a chance to talk to a coach or a player, you know, unless you have certain...
No, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Super valid. So it's very accessible. Obviously, you know, through partnerships like our own Little Red Feather, we're able to bring a lot of people into the game. And that was my goal when I started out, was I just wanted more people to be able to be involved. And there's an affordability aspect. There's a risk aspect. And so I liked the whole fractional share approach. I always knew I wanted to be an owner. I didn't have any money when I was, you know, 20 years old. And I just put together money with my friends, and we just started buying horses. And that's how Little Red Feather became. We're in different times, and we have to be realistic. And there's still, even though it's accessible, there's a barrier of entry. You know, you hand someone that's never been to the racetrack the racing form, and it basically looks like gibberish, right? They don't know what anything means. So there is a little bit of that. I think we have to make it easier for our fans and bring them back. Obviously, back in the day, as you well know, if you wanted to bet on a horse, you had to go to the track. Nowadays, yep. With FanDuel and all the other ways to bet, you don't even have to. You watch it in the comfort of your living room, and you can bet your horses and have a beautiful day at home, and you don't have to go anymore. So it's taken away from the brick-and-mortar business.
Short, right? You know, because it's like...
Absolutely.
In some ways,
absolutely.
It's like for the handle, but in the other ways, it's like, you know, I feel like it's taken away from that in-person
experience.
Track, you know.
Absolutely.
And I love going to the track. I love it too.
Yeah.
It's the best. I'm there almost every weekend somewhere, and I'll be at Gulfstream tomorrow. I'll be at Gulfstream on Sunday, and I don't play a lot. I'm more, you know, it's more social and talking to people, but I tell people all the time, if you are looking for something to do with your family, with your date, there isn't a better form of entertainment available today. Now, the double edge that I see that our industry is facing is these electronic platforms that are opening up, making it easier, are also offering other things to wager on that distract people away from the sport. So even NASCAR.
Yeah, I don't know if I think we got bigger problems than that. So I think the one thing that I'm really kind of proud of is the way that our sport has come together for the safety of the animal. That bullshit New York Times article that came out last week was just a complete joke. And I think the group Light Up Racing had a great rebuttal. I actually tweeted their rebuttal to it, if you want to take a look at it. And it's, you know, I'm so done with all the negativity. Like, these horses there's a breeding operation, and mostly, you know, in Lexington, Kentucky, although we all have regional breeding programs. But, you know, if you saw how these horses are treated and how they're taken care of, and just the care and the love for these animals, and they're bred to do a job. This is their job. So,
well, here's the thing I tell people all the time, they love their job. So I'm very involved with Old Friends. Old Friends has been instrumental in caring for these retired athletes.
Yeah.
But here's the interesting thing. Michael is really big about, hey, let's let the horse be a horse. But what's the most interesting is you put Game On Dude and Little Mike in a paddock, they still have a race at least twice a day. up and down the hill.
Yeah. No.
This is what they live for. And it's kind of funny. You see a couple of them starting to run, and pretty soon the whole side of the hill is running. And it's just, like you said, they're bred to do the job, but they enjoy their job.
Absolutely, and they're just so well taken care of, and I wish people were more educated. I wish our messaging was better.
They live better than the people that are criticizing them, to be honest. And I tell people this a lot because I'm very close to the farm level. I'm on farms all the time in Wellington, Ocala, Kentucky, New York, California. And I tell people all the time, the first thing you notice when you go to one of these farms, you don't even smell a horse. These barns are so immaculate, so clean. They are so well cared for. It's the first horse barn you'll ever walk in that you don't smell horse manure. I mean, these things, if you go to Claiborne Stallion Barn, it's cleaner than most restaurants. And I mean, I don't think people realize how they're cared for. The other thing I would say to people that look at this, and you'll understand this better than most, There's an old saying in entertainment, welcome to Hollywood, and it refers to just this, like this negative press. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that have been part of a show or part of a production or a movie or whatever. They have somebody that comes for an interview. They think everything's good. The article comes out, and they pan them. And then they run into the guy 6 months or a year later, and he's like, oh, I really like your work. And it's like, hold on. You blasted us. And he's like, yeah, no, I did. But then somebody told me to take a look at it again, and, you know, it's pretty good. It's like, really? And that's what I always tell people. You can't put everything on an article. It's one guy's opinion. So take some time, look around, listen, because anybody who's in the spotlight for any moment of time has got blasted at one point or another. And, you know, I just don't buy it. You know, it's negative press. I would love to know.
All I'm saying is I don't think we as an organization, and I say we as just the horse racing community, has really done a great job of counteracting against some of these media terrorists.
Could not agree more.
I think that now we are starting with groups like Led Up Racing. We're starting to have the fuel, and we have the numbers and the statistics to back up our claims that horse racing is safer than it has ever been. It just is. Like, period. That's it. And you can't argue it because the numbers say so. So now, does that mean that it wasn't safe at one time? Yeah, that probably there's some. Look, there's bad apples in every sport, right? And there's some bad trainers.
Look at any sport. Football was not very safe at one time. Automotive racing was not very safe at one time. You know, I mean, every sport has gone through evolution on safety and improved itself, and horse racing is no different. The one thing, and I would agree with you 1,000%, horse racing could do a better job of promoting itself positively. We have so many good things, and don't get me wrong, I feel like there's a lot of that that's being done. I think there's, you know, like My Racehorse, I think like what you're doing with, you know, Little Red Feather, I think, you know, with like some of the tours. I think the tours are really huge, like, you know, what Old Friends does and what the Horse Park does and what Horse Country does, because it lets, you know, Old Friends gets 70,000 visitors a year through the farm. The vast majority of them are from outside horse racing. That can only be good because they see firsthand, gosh, these guys are in great shape. They're happy. Yeah, exactly. They're running around.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but I'm the president of KARMA, which is our aftercare association here. I had Harris on the show a couple weeks ago. Right. So, I mean, it is my passion. I'm very, very much an advocate of all aftercare, and there's some great groups out there that are making sure that these horses, after their careers, have a place to go. So, and have a place
but
to have a second
that,
career.
Like what you're doing and what Old Friends is doing, that's a real, we just need to promote it more, let more people know about it, because there are a lot of positives, but I agree with you. I don't think we sound our own horn enough, if you will.
Yeah, I agree. But it's also, I mean, for years, you know, horse racing's been pretty fractured, right? It's state run. It's every state has their own rules. And I think that was part of the problem. You couldn't get behind a national entity. We tried it with, you know, NTRA back in the day with the Go Baby Go campaign. But now I think people are starting to wake up, and I think people are starting to get on board with kind of one voice. So that's what I would say, is that I think we know we need to do a better job, and I think people are working on it, and people who are much smarter than I am.
But in all fairness, I think to your point, I think we are doing a better job. It's better today than it was a year ago. It'll be better next year than it is today. So I feel like, you know, it's going in the right direction. And I, you know, I feel like it's kind of unfair for people to compare, because you hear about this a lot, where people talk about something that happened in the past. And it's like, you know, you could do that with any sport. I mean, we lost Dale Earnhardt Sr. due to a safety issue that's been corrected. You know, I mean, this is not just horse racing. So you learn as you go, you evolve as you go, and you try and improve. And I do believe that horse racing is doing that. And I truly believe, and I tell people this all the time, the vast majority, I mean 99.9% of horsemen, owners, and trainers truly do want what's best for the horse. I think that the image of, you know, people doing things, you know, underhanded just to win races is not accurate. I mean, I'm not going to say it never happens. I'm not that naive. But I think the vast majority are trying. It's just, to your point, part of the challenges are there's different rules in different states. So some of these violations you hear about are something that's legal in one state, not in another. And it, you know, there's a trace amount of something. So sometimes I feel like these things get blown out of proportion, and it isn't, you know, it's not like they were giving the horse some horrible thing. It was something that's perfectly legal to be used in training, and it didn't get out of the system quick enough. But I feel like that's not a diabolical plan, you know. I think it's sometimes
I agree.
You know what I mean? So I think the positives are good, and, you know, it's been, you know, we continue to grow. So, you know, your grandfather, Howard W., gets into it. Does Hawk then continues it, right? Is he's been involved?
No, it skips a generation.
He skipped it. He focused on Hollywood.
Yeah. he was busy making movies. So, I mean, listen, he loves it, and he loves watching our races, and, you know, he's very, very supportive. What's that?
And he's a regular at the track, right? He's still pretty in.
You know, my dad? No, my dad doesn't go to the track a lot.
Never?
No.
Okay.
No. He'll go once in a blue moon. He'll come down to Del Mar once a summer and hang out for a day. He likes it down there. But, no, it's kind of not his thing. Like I said, it skips a generation, so I'm looking forward to my grandkids.
That's hilarious. How do you know? So now, do you have kids, obviously?
I have three kids. I have two twin boys that are 28, and I have another one who's 24, another boy that you probably do. You watch a lot of TV? You watch Netflix and shows and stuff?
Yeah,
so my son was played Eric Menendez in the Monsters show that was just on Netflix.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Cooper Koch. That's my son.
Okay.
And my son Peyton is an editor, and he was nominated for an Emmy for editing Only Murders in the Building, that show with Steve Martin and Martin Short. Yep, and now he's on a new show called Avatar: The Last Airbender, which is also on Netflix.
I saw that.
And my little one is a budding pop star. So he's a singer songwriter. So a lot of entertainment in the family. They do like going to the track. But they are not psychopaths like me.
So do you see them more like your grandfather? Maybe Hollywood first, horse ownership second.
I try to steer them away from horse ownership. I know how difficult it is.
So maybe it's a generational thing. Maybe, like you said, the grandkids.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, my nephew, my brother's son, loves horse racing, loves gambling. I think he's eight, and I think he has his own TVG account. FanDuel account, but don't tell them. Don't tell them.
He was born in 1956, according to FanDuel.
Exactly.
That's so great. So, you know, it comes up to, you know, that. So how did Howard W. ever get into it? What got him hooked? What got him started? Do you know the story?
God, I don't know. I mean, I remember the horses that he started with. One was, it was way back in the day. He had a horse named Sweet Ot. He had a horse named, like I said, Doc Simon was one of his first horses. I think it was just friends who just got him into the game, and he just fell in love with it, you know? I think he started with possibly Warren Studi and then was with Mel Studi. It was so long ago. I apologize, Mark, for not knowing the true story off the top of my head. I should have my sister come on. She probably knows. But I think he just fell in love with the sport, and I think he just got involved, and then he started bringing other people involved. He partnered with Aaron Spelling when Aaron Spelling was really hot doing all those television shows, and they had a bunch of good horses. And there's a famous story that my grandfather was in a meeting, and they had a race, and he actually took a helicopter to Hollywood Park, landed in the infield, watched the race, and then left after the race. Tom Canuse tells a story. Tom Canuse is an agent. He represents Antonio Frasu right now and has had, you know, back in the day at every jockey. And I guess my grandfather was in a really important meeting at Paramount, but he told his secretary, Lori Abdo, who was an amazing person, he said, look, you know, I'm unavailable for the next hour, but if Tom Canuse calls, put him through. Because they were drawing entries, and my grandfather wanted to know what if the horse got in and what race it's going to be. So, I mean, he was just really passionate. He just loved the game, and obviously he passed it down to me. So, I mean, I was by his side. My grandfather used to pick me up, after school, and we would go out to Hollywood Park, and we'd stand on the backstretch right near the starting gate, and he knew all the jockeys, and they'd all wave. And I mean, that was my upbringing, was going to the track on, you know, Thursday afternoons. So it, like I said, I use the word infectious, and it really is. It's once it gets you hooked, you're just in, and you're in for a long time.
I completely agree. And I mean, that's amazing to me. I mean, like, Hollywood Park has always been a favorite. Like I said, I was fortunate. I mean, it was way before I even was around the industry. I was working for a supplier to the studios, mostly around Burbank, and I would go just to go. And it was funny because it's infectious, and, you know, certain names catch your eye, and, you know, it's like, it is, it's just, but that, you know, the history of it is so amazing to me. And, you know, there's no richer history than California racing. So Hollywood Park, Santa Anita, Del Mar, it's just, every time I'm out there, it's amazing. It's kind of like walking the back lot at Warner Brothers. You know, it's like there's so much history, it just blows your mind.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the glory days. I mean, you see pictures of Santa Anita with the grandstands just full. I mean, I remember going to the track, and there'd be 40, 50,000 people there on a Saturday. You know, obviously we don't get those kind of crowds anymore, but we do on big days, and that's where the kind of sport, you know, is heading. Obviously, you see what's happening at Churchill Downs with the financial investment they're making. You look at Belmont Park with the multi-million-dollar project that they're doing. You look at the crowds at Saratoga and Del Mar. You know, I have a house in Lexington, and I go to Keeneland a lot. And if you go to Keeneland on a Saturday in April, the last thing on your mind is that horse racing is dead, because it is not. It is massive. It is, the crowds are incredible, and there are young people there. So
in Kentucky, it's unique, right? Because I lived in Kentucky for about 6 years, and it was I loved it. In fact, I'll probably at some point have a place there again. And I'm there a lot, and I have a lot of friends there. But Keeneland is almost part of the fabric of the city. You know, it's, even if a kid didn't grow up in horse racing, spring and fall, that's the place to be. And people dress to go to the races. You go to Malone's or Tony's after the races. It's just part of the society. And I wish more people could experience that, because like you said, you are not going to think horse racing's dead if you're in Kentucky on a Saturday. And it really is Keeneland, because I would dare say, now, Churchill will get more people just because of the size, but I don't think there's a more loyal crowd than Keeneland in Kentucky.
Well, yeah, in Kentucky, I mean, Keeneland's just incredible. And I know, and as I've grown in this industry, I mean, I know a lot of people there. You're like Shannon Arvin, who runs it, is an incredible woman. Gatewood Bell is a good friend of mine. He's now the head of racing. You know, all the people there are great. They love racing and they love their customers. And I think that's really, you know, it's really important, because when you talk about horse racing, a lot of times the customer gets a little bit overlooked. And I'm not just talking about the patrons that are going there day to day, but I'm talking about the gamblers, the handicappers. Yeah. I mean, that's how, you know, people don't even understand that that's how purses are, you know, derived. You know, people have to bet on this sport so that the purses can be paid out. Now, with the ancillary revenue that is from these slots or historical horse racing and casinos, yeah, that's all great. But you're seeing what's happening in Florida right now with the decoupling issue, and that's very dangerous. It's a very dangerous precedent.
Really hope for our
game.
I don't know what the over-under is on that, but I really hope it doesn't happen. I hope
they're working on it.
I sat with Eric back last weekend, and I know there's a lot of people way smarter than me that are trying to come up with solutions. And he seemed pretty positive that there will be one. But to your point, I don't think that's healthy. I think we need to stay intact, work together, you know, for the good of both sides, you know, the track and the handle. You know, it's like, you know, that's important. It's good for the horsemen. It's good for the breeding. It's good for everything.
You hit the nail on the head, my friend. Yes. I have no comeback other than yes.
We kind of come up to, you know, your career. And you, as you said, you know, you started out with your friends. When did you start, you know, Little Red Feather?
Well, I started...
Or was there something before that?
No, I graduated Northwestern in 1991. I knew I wanted to be an owner. I had no money. I went to a couple buddies. We put together a little group. We have there was a Cuban restaurant that we all used to go to. It's called Versailles. And you'd eat the garlic chicken and you'd smell for like 4 days. And it was just awesome. And so I created what's called the Versailles Racing Syndicate, and I brought in like 10 or 15 guys. We actually bought a horse. We named her No More Worries. We thought, you know, she was going to be a champion. We had a great time. And then I started these little kind of what I'll call claiming funds, where I'd raise money and we'd claim horses and just for, you know, action. And then my good friend Bruce Corwin, who we lost recently, unfortunately, who's the head of Metropolitan Theaters out here, another Hollywood connection, loaned me some money to go buy some horses. And because I said I wanted to try to make it into a business, and he was kind enough to give me some money. And I went out, we bought three horses with a gentleman named Don Chatlos. And the second horse we ever bought in 2000, was Singletary. And wow. That was when we started Little Red Feather, was with the group that was Singletary. We bought a group of three horses, and Don picked out Singletary. I give him all the credit. All he did was, you know, go win the 2004 Breeders' Cup Mile at Lone Star Park, one of the greatest days of my life. And the rest is history. I mean, I knew nothing. I readily admit that was now 21 years ago. I have learned so much, and I continue to learn. This the great thing about this sport and this game is you have to be a sponge. You have to learn. You have to continue to listen to people that you trust and respect, and you can never stop learning.
It's very true.
And you're never you're not always going to be right. You're not always going to be wrong. And you just try to limit your mistakes and to try to grow and learn and continue to, especially for us who have, we report to a lot of partners. I mean, Little Red Feather has, you know, probably over 500 active investors. We have a very large mailing list, and people trust us because they know we're going to do the best we can to find the best horses we can, to treat them the best we can, to run them in the appropriate spots, to win races, and to bring, you know, the thrill and the energy and the excitement to horse racing. So that's kind of the quick history of Little Red Feather. But trust me, there's been some lean times. I mean, the 2008 recession was really tough. I didn't even know if we were going to make it. Because we need investors, and we always need new investors. So we're always on the lookout for people who want to try this, but I'm extremely realistic with them. And when people call me and they ask, well, can you show me the ROI of your last five partnerships? I literally tell them, you do not want to do that if that's your question.
Yeah, you're looking at this all wrong. You do this because you want.
This is not an investment. This is not an investment. This game is to be done with disposable income. And to have fun and to have the experience. It's all about the experience of owning a thoroughbred racehorse. That's all it is.
Well, we touched on it in the beginning, and, you know, it's amazing to me that I really feel, and I'm not just saying this because I'm talking to you, but I really feel like groups like yours, you know, Little Red Feather, are really good for the industry because, you know, one of the things that we need is more owners, fresh owners, people getting invested.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I've said this for a long time. People like you and most of my guests have forgot more than I know about horse racing. But I've said, you know, I've been sitting in the audience watching the show for quite a while, and you start to see patterns. And one of the things that I noticed was, you know, and I feel like I kind of straddle this. So I'm involved in horse racing. I'm involved in multiple other things in sports, and I've even raced myself SCCA Corvettes for 21 years. And I've said this for a long time, that the difference now is there's more competition for the guy with, as you put it, disposable income. So the young professional that is kind of successful, you know, why does he want to get involved in horse racing? What is it? You know, we need to really do things to attract those people, because there's other things going after them that are, quite frankly, shinier and brighter. You know, whether it's a big boat or a Ferrari or a racing or just pleasure or a collection. You know, it's all kind of competing for that same, what I would call, entertainment disposable dollar. So I really think things like Little Red Feather are great because, you know, we need something. I mean, My Area's Horse is great, right? I have nothing, you know, I think it's a great idea. I don't have anything negative to say. I know there's some controversy. People like it, people don't. But I will say it's. I look at it like an entry level. But then when the guy wants to go to the next step, it feels like there's a big, big step there. You know what I mean? How do you take the guy?
Well, it's just more risk and more expense.
More risk,
all.
That's where I feel like organizations like yours, if more people know about it, they could get involved and kind of go to that next level. You know what I mean? And that's
absolutely.
Where, you know, because, I mean, like West Point Thoroughbreds, they do a tremendous job. But you've got to be fairly established to step into that, you know, because they don't like...
Well, I mean...
You know,
yeah. There's different platforms, different companies,
right?
just like in everything. And it, listen, there's a bunch of companies like Little Red Feather to do a great job. Friends with all of them. We all have the same goals and aspirations, and we just want to provide our partners with the best possible experience. And that's the bottom line.
I
whether
agree.
It's my racehorse
people.
Or yeah.
My
and you didn't even ask me about
like
Little Red Feather. That's
the
you know,
word doesn't
the,
get out. Or-
Yeah, the name came from my grandfather.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, my grandfather used to, when I was a little kid, he would tell me bedtime stories about a fictitious Indian chief named Chief Little Red Feather. And Chief Little Red Feather would always get into trouble, and he'd have to figure it out. And that was kind of these stories, these bedtime stories that he would tell me when I was little. And so when he passed and I started Little Red Feather, I wanted to dedicate it to him. So that's where you get Little Red Feather from. And I have no Native American ties other than my grandfather's bedtime stories. So there you
that's
go. I hope we don't get I hope we don't get canceled.
No, I hope I don't know how you could. I mean, that's like, you know, have it come from your grandpa is pretty amazing. I mean, plus he was such a legend. I mean, it's just pretty cool.
I think that just stepped up a lot in my world. Yeah, I owe a lot to my grandparents. I owe a lot to my dad and my family. And, you know, also just, you know, it's like anything else. And it's like what I tell my kids is like, if you do something that you love, it's not work. And I've been extremely fortunate and blessed by the amount of people that have gotten involved with Little Red Feather and trust us and have provided, you know, a great life for my own family, that is all due to these horses. So I have great respect, great admiration for anybody who is willing to put their hard-earned money into this sport. And I thank my lucky stars every day. And if there's one lesson out there to learn as we wrap this up, is that, you know, you know, I know it's cliche, but you can follow your dreams. You know, you can do what you really want to do, and you'll be successful at it if you work hard and surround yourself with people who are really better than you and smarter than you. And then you should do whatever you want. And I tell that to my kids, and they know that. And then we support them no matter, you know, when they're ready to give up. And I mean, my son was ready to quit acting and then got this job on this incredible role on Monsters. You know, he was literally scooping ice cream at an ice cream store, and he was just about ready to be done. And then this happens, and it changes life. And you just have to, support it.
And
you have to believe in yourself.
Yeah.
You have to just believe in yourself, believe in what you're doing, believe in your product, and work hard. But it's like, for me, I'm so lucky. I get to go to Florida next week and go to the 2-year-old and training sale in Ocala, and I love that, and be around. You see the entire community come together and looking for that next superstar, and that's my goal.
I agree. And, you know, it is amazing. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I think I tell my kids, I have a son's 22 and my daughter's 18, and I say very similar. I always tell them, you can do anything you want. You just have to want it bad enough.
Yep.
You have to want it bad enough to work for it. And, you know, if you really believe in it, put yourself into it, it'll come. And, you know, as we come up on the top of the hour, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention your show, The Owner's Box. And I've been wanting to ask you how it came about.
I was tired of reading articles that said that this horse was Bob Baffert's horse or Todd Pletcher's horse or Phil D'Amato's horse. I said, why don't they talk to the owners? So there was no show dedicated to talking to the owners of these horses and hearing their stories. So Michelle, you and I have been doing this for about 10 years now, maybe more. We really were like one of the first people to, before podcasting got really, really popular. And we have archives of shows with incredible people, owners, bloodstock agents, vets, you know, and it's really become this like cult following. You don't think anybody's listening. And then you go to the track at Keeneland on a Saturday and people are like, hey man, love the show. And I'm like, oh really? So it's been a fun, I tell people this all the time. I don't make any money. I never wanted to be at the mercy of trying to make money to do a podcast. And we do have some sponsorships, but it doesn't go to me. I just do it to get the word out, to get ownership, you know, out there and have people have these owners who are so important to our game tell their stories about how they got involved. And you know, we've had everybody on our show, so it's pretty fun. It's a good listen. We're very positive. Try to stay out of we don't want to have a show where we're just talking about issues, although I do get on my soapbox sometimes. But it's called The Owner's Box. It's on all your podcast channels, and hopefully, you know, it continues to go on. It's fun to do. I enjoy it.
No, I think it's a great concept. It's kind of like this show where we just talk. I really try to focus on what people don't know, keep it positive. I mean, as you say, once in a while I take a jab here or there, but you can't love something if you don't get a little passionate.
Absolutely,
you know,
man. Well, I appreciate the time, man. I thank you for
having
me on.
Yeah, you.
No, I'm wishing you all the success with your podcast, and you know, we'll definitely see you out at the track sometime.
I really appreciate it, Billy, and my best to your family. And I have to tell you, it's truly an honor. And I would love to have you and your sister on sometime to talk more about this.
She knows more of the stories than I. She has a much better memory than I do. So I'll mention it to her, and we'll see if we can do something.
That would be terrific. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you joining us. We got to take a minute here and, you know, thank a few people. So if you have employees, you have healthcare issues, take a minute and look at mvgrayhealthcare.com. She is the best of the best when it comes to healthcare consulting. I don't make a dime off this. I put this out there because I truly believe she's the best there ever was at this. If you're in New York, go to King Umberto's. If you're in Miami, you have to check out the Palm. And we hope that you will take a chance and go to a track somewhere. Horse racing is an incredible way to spend an afternoon. Get out, see one. There's big tracks, small tracks. Doesn't matter where you go, you'll enjoy it. And I guarantee, as Billy and I talked about, you'll be hooked for life. This has been Hollywood and Horsepower. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next week.